Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Well, there's some fake news right there, because this sure as heck fire isn't Mike Crute. This is Pat Kreitlaw from the cabin studio on Lake Wissota in beautiful Chippewa Falls, where normally I'm greeting you on Wednesday nights as part of the Up North podcast, along with Kirk Bangstead and Kristen Lyerly. But instead, I'm going to fill in for Kirk for a couple of hours here. Dom will be around in the next hour joining me as well as we continue our look at what's happening, not just in, you know, Madison and Washington, and not just up here in Chippewa Falls at the Jack Dawson Studios. Few people know that the cabin studio was actually constructed by Jack Dawson shortly before his ill-fated trip on the Titanic. People say, hey, wait a minute, I thought that was a movie blooper that Jack Dawson's talking about working on Lake Wissota 5 years before the dam was built. The other part of the story is he actually did know, you know, that the dam was going up. He was simply part of the early crew. He built this cabin. We've put a studio in it, and now we get to talk about news from up north. You're not buying this for a moment, right?
I'm the king of the world!
Fortunately, I didn't burn down the cabin studio shortly before coming in here, because as Crudy was reaching out and letting me know that something had come up and could I, you know, pinch hit for a little while, at that very moment, I was trying not to burn the house down by plugging in an ancient appliance. Now, we have, like a lot of folks, we have Instapot. I am part of the cult of the Instapot, so you can go ahead and send me your recipes and I'll send you mine. We have, the air fryer, because of course you need something wildly expensive to warm up cold pizza with. So we have that as well. The margarita maker, otherwise known as a blender. But over at Trader Joe's, when I was actually down in Madison last week, I was down there for a friend's birthday party, and they have these little frozen potato patties. They look just like the hash browns you get at McDonald's for breakfast, you know, fit in a little sleeve and what have you. Get them home figuring, you know, this will be something I can just, nuke or put on the frying pan. No, the instructions are very clear that these things should be cooked up, you know, to 400 degrees in a conventional oven, which sounds like a tremendous waste for one little potato patty. So I went down to the basement and blew a significant amount of dust off a Black & Decker toaster oven from 1986 when we got married. And my wife still doesn't know this. Thank goodness she's at work and not listening to the radio today. But with great trepidation, plugged this bad boy in, expected it to ignite all of the dust inside into something, you know, similar to a silo fire. But I'm happy to report that it actually worked. The single potato patty did not, in fact, become carbonized. I do not have an extra lump of charcoal. But thanks to Trader Joe's, you know, my electric bill is going up now, because I'm sure that thing is not the most energy efficient appliance that we have.
They taste like burning.
it came mighty. You know what came close to it last week in the oven? We were putting in frozen pizza, lots of matzah, free shout out, love it. And a couple of pieces of cheese hit the bottom of the oven and just, you know, charred right there. And boy, doesn't that ruin what you've got. Brian, are you into like a whole bunch of home appliances along the counter, or are you just a toaster guy?
I have my toaster oven. I do have a toaster oven, but I have it like front loading. So like rather than it the door coming down at you, you actually roll it up like an old school bread box. Mm-hmm. Or like an old school desk, you kind of roll it up and it goes over it, so you can actually access your food rather than having to risk touching or having it drop onto the glass in front.
I'm trying to figure out why we brought it down to the basement in the first place, because usually it's replaced by something else. And I know that sitting next to it in the basement is the bread making machine. And I'm sure a lot of people remember the bread making machine phase that we all went through as well. And where you thought you were making a lump of bread, but it was actually more like a large cube of bread that sometimes worked and sometimes did not. So we've got a regular island of misfit toys for small appliances down there in the basement, but it's nice to know we could bring one of them up and have it work. And it still works better than the toaster I finally took away from my mom, who had a very ancient toaster with one of those really thick black cords, and the part that you plug into the wall is big and round and black, and it's a toaster, but it has no timer on it. You have to manually pop the toast when it's ready. So again, the fact that there are two Kreitlos here who have tried to burn down their houses but have not succeeded at this point tells you that, fire departments near and far would like us to go to Kohl's and get some fresh machinery. So that's how we had started the day out here before Mr. Crute called and asked me if I would talk more about news and not about small appliances and the burning smell that can come from them. I wondered if Americans have lost their ability to be surprised. I just finished writing the daily newsletter for Up North News. For those of you who said, Pat, you didn't properly introduce yourself, I'm Pat Kreitlow, the founding editor of Up North News. You'll find it at upnorthnewswi.com or search Up North News WI on social media. I write a daily newsletter. It oftentimes starts with a short editorial. And the one that I just wrote said that as Americans, we may have lost the capacity to be surprised because we are awash in media choices and swamped with speculation. We talk out loud about the possibilities of almost everything. And so as a result, I'm wondering if Americans have the capacity to be surprised as a group. It just doesn't happen that often. And yet part of me still thinks it could happen in a little more than 48 hours when the January 6th committee sits down and finally, after endless hours of closed door sessions, of testimony, of gathering evidence, that committee is finally going to put together a narrative of what came to pass prior to and during the violent attack on the U.S. Capitol, which, you know, in the aftermath has left several police officers dead or maimed, plenty of other people, including a nation, wounded, and wondering what the hell happened. It was not something that just happened to come together. And the committee, even though we've known for quite some time about them trying to meet, Republicans saying, nope, we're not going to be part of your committee. We don't want to get to the bottom of the most violent attack since the War of 1812. But I still have a feeling, based on the drips and drabs that have come out, that we are going to be surprised at some of the things that we'll be seeing there. It will be followed, of course, by a stream of denial, because it's not just a river in Egypt, as they say. But I think that there's going to be a lot there for us to chew on come Friday and well beyond. I don't know what it ultimately leads to, but we need to take seriously the threat that's out there. It's a big part of what we do at Up North News is basically our first beat is democracy and protecting it, something we never thought we'd have to do in our lifetime. So it's why we're going to be paying attention Thursday night. It's why every network is going to be broadcasting it Thursday night. One network is not. there is at least one. There is that propaganda channel that has news in the name of it. And that's the thing that especially galls me. Well, a lot of things gall me about, you know, Fox News Channel, the least of which is describing itself as news. But this is a channel that, in purporting to have news, is not going to be covering the biggest story in quite some time. Again, the story of an attack on a presidential election and basically trying to steal your vote away, facilitate a coup, install an authoritarian leader. And yet Fox News Channel has decided that that's something they're not going to do, which strikes me as odd given, let's see if I got the statistic here, how many stories they did about Benghazi. And of course, they covered the hearings, you know, like none other, like nobody's business. According to one journalist on Twitter, 1,098 primetime segments on Benghazi from the day of the attack until the committee hearings, and they carried those committee hearings for more than 7 hours. And yet this is the same network that will not be televising the insurrection committee hearings come Thursday night.
Yeah, but have you considered how much spite and pettiness is involved?
Well, there is that, and of course the advertising revenue, which I mean, that just raises a whole different subject of, you know, who is still advertising on this Fox channel, and what's wrong with us that we're not putting enough pressure on those advertisers. Although I am also encouraged to see the increasing amount of pressure that that folks are getting cable TV customers to apply. I certainly is one of them that, you know, so far I've taken one step. I should take more to say to our cable company, I don't want to pay for this. This doesn't belong in the news tier. If you want a separate propaganda tier, go ahead, but not going to pay for this. But they're there. They exist, and they will continue to carry that programming. But I think we're going to get a lot more out of this come Thursday night. We're going to take a break. Be back with more after this.
No, I don't take responsibility at all.
Oh, there's a big surprise. That's an incredible... I think I'm going to have a heart attack and die from that surprise.
They taste like burning.
You fool!
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Welcome back. Pat Kreitlow in for Mike Brute on Devil Radio, and it is my pleasure to be here, not just in the capacity of running Up North News, but also in that past life as a state legislator, which takes me to the topic that I wanted to kick off this segment with. One of those rare times where a former Democratic legislator is going to say things that come to the defense of a Republican candidate. I think I heard the sound of Crute driving off the road just now, but you know, give me a chance here. This, of course, relates to Tim Michaels, the millionaire businessman who, again, believes, you know, like many other millionaire businessmen, that there's nothing they can't do. And that includes running for governor of the state of Wisconsin. It has come to folks' attention that even though the secret to a successful business is attention to detail, there was a detail that he missed on his nominating petitions. And as a result, the Wisconsin Election Commission is going to be talking about this screw up, for lack of a better word, on Friday, and conceivably could boot him off the ballot just days after he got the endorsement from former President Donald Trump and immediately, grabbed control of the attention in that four-way race for the Republican nomination. So Michael's nominating petition, like any of us who have run for office, there's a spot, of course, for your name, what district you're running for, some other information, and then some lines for signatures. And a little pull back the curtain here, folks. You can't just get on the ballot by saying, I want to be on the ballot. I want to run for this. To get on the ballot means filing a little bit of paperwork, and it also includes gathering signatures on a nominating petition. It's like 2,000 for statewide office, 400 for state senate, 200 for state assembly. The whole point being, if you're not able to use the shoe leather to get at least that many people to say, yep, I think that guy ought to be on the ballot, you're wasting people's time. So that's why we have these nominating petitions and people gather signatures. Now, things don't always go well with nominating petitions. There have been candidates who came up short. They turned in the minimum amount. Let's say they turned in 200 signatures for a state assembly race. Then people at the Elections Commission, and before that, the Government Accountability Board, they go through and they look at those signatures because they are legal documents. They're petitions. And they want to make sure that this is a real person, a real address that's on there. And sometimes some of the names get struck. They may be maybe completely illegible, or as is often the case, it's found that they signed more than one candidate's petition. You can sign multiple petitions for multiple races, but only one for candidate per race. So if you signed one for Tim Michaels, you can't also sign on the nominating petition for Rebecca Clefish and so on. So there's reasons that signatures get struck down, and sometimes candidates fall beneath the threshold of what they need to qualify to get on the ballot. It happened in a very big way in a couple of instances in the past. In the very recent past, in Milwaukee, two well-known candidates got bumped off the ballot running for county executive because they basically contracted with an independent outside entity to go gather signatures for them. And again, because of the duplicate signatures that I mentioned before, by the time you threw out some of the duplicates, they were below the threshold and didn't qualify to be on the ballot. That happened just a couple of weeks ago in the state of Michigan, and it was amazing. There were 10 Republicans who wanted to run against Governor Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. Five of those 10 failed to qualify to get on the ballot because an outside firm that they used engaged in massive forgery, just duplicating signatures, one person writing in multiple signatures all over the place. So nominating petitions are like the first hump to get over, and yet some candidates don't get over it. Well, that takes us back to Tim Michaels. His issue is not signatures. It's actually the information at the top and or the bottom of it. And I know about this personally, having run for office, but also because, much like Tim Michaels, I have two addresses. There's a street address, but for some people, the mailing address is a separate one. In my case, it's a post office box. So I live in the town of Eagle Point, just outside of Chippewa Falls, but the mailing address is in the city of Chippewa Falls at this post office box. So whichever address they ask for, mailing address or residential address, you better get that right. And Tim Michaels did not. He put on one address rather than the other. And you can argue that this is a ticky-tack thing. And I would sympathize with it. As somebody, who has two addresses as well and wants to get these things done right. So I do have sympathy with him. But again, it's attention to detail that tells us if you're serious about running for office. And if on Friday the State Elections Commission says no, you can't say, oh, this is just a technicality, because I will remind you of one other case where somebody didn't qualify for the ballot. Young Mr. Kanye West, the who was, what, 14 seconds late turning in his nominating petitions and did not qualify for the ballot. Joe from Madison is joining us on the show. Joe, nice to have you here. Are you with us, Joe?
Far north.
There
you. Can you hear me, Pat?
Yeah. Hi, how are you?
Great. I'm glad you're here and glad you're sitting in for Cootie. You're a wonderful, wonderful alternative host, just from the perspective you bring, having been in news, having been in the state government and a resident of up north. And I just wanted to say to you that you had said at one point in this last segment, your first beat is democracy. And I really, really want to thank you for that. It's the most important thing to understand about what you do as a journalist. Thanks a lot.
Joe, thank you so much. I appreciate it. That's very kind of you. And it's something that, again, should come natural to any newsroom. It's just that we take it especially seriously. We're going to take a break and see if my partner in crime on weekly podcasts, Kirk Bangstad, can join us. We'll be right back.
He wrote his name so bigly.
I'm not going to work here anymore anyway.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
Welcome back. Pat Kreitlow in for Mike Crute on this Tuesday afternoon. Nice to have you along as we cover some topics and hopefully get a chance to talk with Kirk Bangstad from the Minocqua Brewing Company and the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC. He's got a very busy evening ahead of him fighting the Old Boys Network of Minocqua, and he may be available to talk about this soon. We normally talk about that and many, many other things on Wednesday nights on the Up North podcast. It airs live on Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m., and then we turn it into a podcast that you can find in all the usual places, including the Devil Radio app on demand. And I believe it is still played back on Saturday late afternoons, if memory serves right. But of course, since I don't know, I should be looking at the Devil Radio website, and so should you. Then you'll find out when to find me and Kirk and Kristen Lyerly talking about things that that are going on. Amongst those things is a state Supreme Court decision that was handed down today. And the first thing, before we even tell you what it's about, I'm just going to tell you that it's noteworthy in that it is another instance where conservative justice Brian Hagedorn sided with the court's three progressive justices, and in a 4-3 split decision, said that the state, through the Department of Health Services, could in fact release data on COVID outbreaks in businesses, I believe, of 25 employees or more. Now, this is a case that's well over 2 years old now, because it was in those early weeks and months of the pandemic that one of the tools that would have helped, along with various safeguards and what have you, what would have helped is to know where there were outbreaks. It would mean that conditions perhaps weren't safe there, either safeguards weren't being paid attention to, people weren't social distancing, or whatever the case may be. It would have been an important tool for employees and customers to know where not to be at a time when essential workers were, thought of as national treasures to be protected. How quickly that seemed to change for some folks later on in the pandemic. Anyway, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and others in the commerce community brought this to court, saying that this was a matter of, medical data privacy when it did not involve personal data, personal information, and instead was simply business data that would have been helpful, again, for people as, the effort was being made to rein in the pandemic. It was a Waukesha County judge that initially blocked the release of the records. A state appeals court then reversed the lower court ruling, saying that Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce failed to show a justifiable reason for not releasing the records. It's simply one more reason why we can look back at this pandemic with such a sense of frustration. And the needless amount of deaths and infections that occurred because of the, it seemed, never-ending parade of ways in which people on one side of the political aisle, and especially on the big business side of the aisle, attacked the things that people were trying to do to save lives. This was a case brought in part by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which was looking into the data because in past stories, for example, they had shown that there was a reason you were seeing a big surge of cases in the meatpacking industry because a lot of those meatpacking plants weren't looking out for worker safety. And there was other related stories that they did as well, because it seemed almost from the beginning that there were people that, you know, they were not going to treat this with the seriousness that it required. I may have told the story before about a person close to us on the Republican side of things on that fateful St. Patrick's Day, when things really shut down here in 2020. And there were, you know, reports that this thing could kill 50,000 Americans. And this person said, you know, to us, you don't really think it's going to kill 50,000 people, do you? And my wife, a physician, said, I actually think it's going to kill 100,000 people or more. And as we were walking home, you know, I said that was, you know, that was mighty interesting. You know, just coming right out and saying, you think this is going to kill 100,000 people. And she said, I think this is going to kill 200,000 people. This thing is deadly serious and we need to take it that way. Well, of course, people didn't. And here we sit with a million deaths and a case that has had to go for 2 years before getting to the Supreme Court. But it is, again, noteworthy as what I started with, that this is a Supreme Court that is, you know, on a knife's edge. It's got a 4-3 conservative majority. And there's plenty of times when Justice Hagedorn, puts up his conservative bona fides and goes along with the conservative justices, but not every time. And his presence on the court and his behavior on the court is really a metaphor for what we've seen in the Republican Party writ large, where you still have some, you know, mainline old school OG conservatives who are looking at, you know, the letter of the law, as opposed to what we've seen far too often in, you know, Republican and conservative circles. And that is, you know, we're not really looking at the letter of the law anymore. We're looking at what we want to do and, you know, be able to make the rules ourselves. It's where we find ourselves with the January 6th committee that's going to be meeting on Thursday, and all of the shenanigans prior to that with contesting a fairly held election. One of my favorite headlines this week was in the Washington Post talking about the efforts of the Trump campaign to put up a slate of fake electors. The headline from yesterday's Washington Post says, "Fake Trump electors in Georgia told to shroud their plans in secrecy, according to an email." So of course they put it in an email, you know, to be secret about what they were doing in putting up this fraudulent slate of electors. It's the same thing that happened here in Wisconsin, where, again, you had a slate of phony electors, including a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who have been using the defense that, well, this was just a just in case election irregularities were discovered. Bull. There were no irregularities.
Do you remember who facilitated them getting into the Capitol to go and sign all that stuff?
I was just getting to young Mr. Fitzgerald.
Great. His own election.
Scott Fitzgerald at the time was the Senate majority leader, the Republican leader of the Wisconsin State Senate, but was running for an open seat in Congress, won that seat in that November 2020 election. and could have just laid low and made plans to move to D.C. and be part of Congress. But no, he did facilitate that December gathering of fake electors in the state capitol on the same day that the real electors were meeting in state capitals all across the country. But in Wisconsin and in Georgia, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and some other states, a slate of fraudulent electors was meeting. Knowing that there had been no irregularities up to that point, again, this was not something spontaneous. The email trail is showing, the testimony trail is showing how the Trump campaign was organizing this, not as a what if, but a until we're able to get into the halls of Congress on January 6th, when those electoral votes are being counted, and disrupt those proceedings in a parliamentary way by getting Vice President Mike Pence to say that, you know, due to irregularities that he would not be able to explain, but due to them, he was not going to recognize the electoral votes of this state, and this state. And as a result, either throw the election to the House or straight up declared that Donald Trump had won the election after you threw out the contested ballots. That was all part of the same plan. That's why it was no accident that there was a fake set of electors being put up in the Senate parlor in the Wisconsin State Capitol with the assistance of Scott Fitzgerald. And the same thing was happening in Georgia, where a staffer warned them, "I must ask for your complete discretion in this process," wrote Robert Sinners, the campaign elections operation director for Georgia, as 16 Republicans gathered at the Capitol to sign certificates that declared themselves duly elected. Quote, "Your duties are imperative to ensure the end result, a win in Georgia for President Trump, but will be hampered unless we have complete secrecy and discretion." There is nothing in there that says, because the election was completely botched and fraudulent, we are putting things in place to be there as a just in case. There was nothing expressed about that. This was a straight up, we are going to put these pieces in place so that on January 6th, Donald Trump can be named president. That didn't happen. But what did happen on the 6th, especially after Mike Pence, with advance notice to President Trump, saying, "I can't do this. I'm not going to do this. I've even had Dan Quayle tell me not to do this." And who'd have thought Dan Quayle and Mike Pence would be the things standing between us and autocracy? But that's when you had other folks who had been, again, not gathering accidentally on the Capitol grounds on January 6th. This was a well-organized event by some people. And it's why you saw new charges filed against the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and others who helped foment the violence that took place on January 6th. And Lord only knows what it could have come down to had they been able to breach the chambers while members of Congress were in there. And while the electoral votes were in there, the actual certificates that were sent from all of those state capitals. Because bear in mind, there were similar certificates that were sent to the National Archives as well by the fake Republican electors in Wisconsin and Georgia and Michigan and elsewhere. So again, I think that for all of the bluster since January 6th, folks don't fully appreciate two things: how we may have been minutes away from complete chaos if either members of Congress and or those electoral ballots had been, you know, seized. And I think folks will be surprised by the amount of planning that went into this and how far up the planning went. I guess I haven't seen it yet, but I understand that Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein have jointly written a new article in anticipation of the January 6th committee. And they write, in essence, "We thought Richard Nixon had established the definition of a corrupt president, and we were wrong. And it's been said plenty of times that that what's happened here is far worse than Watergate. But at the time, there were only three networks. And so everybody was watching. You had to watch when John Dean said that he had warned Richard Nixon, I believe it was, if not one of the other officials, that there was a cancer growing on the presidency. Well, there's much more than a tumor here. It is more than a tumor that was growing from the Donald Trump campaign in terms of what could have happened on that January 6th day. So again, there are more than three networks now. And one of those networks is especially noteworthy that Fox News Channel will not be broadcasting the proceedings live on Thursday night, but certainly will spin the hell out of them in the ensuing 24 hours and beyond to say, you know, ignore what you're hearing, ignore what you're seeing, that there's actually some kind of conspiracy going on here, just as they've been saying it since even before Election Day 2020. When there never has been. It was a straight up clean election. Joe Biden won, and this was a insurrection through and through. We'll be back with more after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow, in for Crute.
I think the White House could have handled this better.
The manufactured outrage by the Democrats right now is hilarious.
Watergate pales as compared to what we're confronting now.
Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes?
Believe me. Believe me.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling devil's advocates.
Welcome back. Pat Kreitlow and for Mike Groot, the devil's advocates. You'll normally hear me on Wednesday nights. You'll normally hear this next voice on Wednesday night, too, one Kirk Bangstad. Mr. Bangstad, how are you?
I've been running all around two states today, Pat, but I'm back in Minocqua ready to fight for my life.
Selling beer and taking names. So, you know, I don't know how much time you want to take on this. Normally we would be talking about, you know, what's coming up tomorrow night on the Up North podcast, heard live Wednesday nights and on weekends as a podcast in all your favorite places. But you and I really haven't had time to talk about this week's show because you've been trying to just open a little tap room, a little souvenir shop for T-shirts. And I know what you're thinking, folks. Minocqua needs another T-shirt shop? Well, yeah, you need Kirk's T-shirt shop. But Kirk's T-shirt shop, well, it's Kirk's T-shirt shop and parking lot is apparently what the situation is there. Are you really fighting the town board tonight over a parking lot?
Well, let's be honest here, Pat. I'm selling beer as well, and it shouldn't be just a T-shirt shop. It should be a tasting room, but I had to make it a bottle stop T-shirt shop because the town forced me to put a parking lot up instead of a nice little beer garden area where I could actually sell people my beer. And so what's happening today is that they wouldn't allow me to open because I said, listen, guys, all construction is delayed in the entire state of Wisconsin. Can I just be open even if I've got gravel on my lot as opposed to like the blacktop that would mean like it's completely finished? And they said no. They said no. So they basically won't let me open on a technicality where any other town would work with a business, especially a small business, to allow them to open during the tourism season, which is what Minocqua is all about.
It does seem odd that folks who come from an ideology that all about it's all about business and yeah. That this particular business with a guy who ran for legislature as a Democrat and who has been a burr in their saddle for COVID restrictions and so many other things, seems odd that suddenly your business is the one that has to have a paved parking lot. Isn't there? There's a couple of gravel parking lots not too far away from you.
So I walked around town like 3 days ago, and I took a picture of a ton of gravel employee parking spots. But you know why there's no parking lots on town? Because the town is tiny. You can't put parking lots in this town, but there are gravel parking spaces that employees use to kind of just park behind the shops. So I took a bunch of pictures of those, and I just showed everybody that's willing to pay attention to me on Facebook how I'm getting singled out. My business is getting singled out for punishment. And I'm losing money every day for not being able to be open.
And of course, the irony is not lost on us that the progressive business owner is being made to put in a parking lot that is not the best surface for rainwater. You know, a gravel parking lot will soak it up. Asphalt parking lots, you know, are not nearly as environmentally friendly, but they're making the progressive business owner do that.
So there's all sorts of problems. I mean, every small town's got its little issues with, you know, power struggles, you know, between some people and other people. So I'm not the only one. I know that, you know, this issue is a bit, you know, too small for a Wisconsin problem, but there will be traffic problem. My business, Highway 51 North, abuts my new tap room, and they're forcing me to put a parking lot in, which means people will be backed up trying to get into my spot, and will back up traffic for all of Wisconsin trying to get north to Ashland. So it's a traffic flow problem. It's bad for the environment, and I'm willing to pay for a public park to be used by everybody and to pay property taxes on it to make it more beautiful as opposed to make it ugly. So that's what I'm going to argue tonight.
So you've got this meeting tonight, which apparently now we knew about it because we talked to you, but apparently a lot of folks know about it up there because of the wonders of Facebook. And is it really a person on the town board is trying to gin up attendance against giving your approval?
Yeah. So I've known about this for a while, but I've never talked about it because I think it's a bunch of, I love the word deplorables because they actually are deplorables. Mm-hmm. There's a hate group. There's about 300 people in town that have formed a Facebook group that says they just take pot shots at me, which I'm completely fine with. I deserve it. Like I poke the bear all the time.
Right.
However, a town board member went onto that hate group and said, wouldn't it be nice if you all showed up to when Kirk's giving his testimony on why he wants to put up a park. So, which is against the law. Like due process is part of every hearing of every town board. People get due process, and if somebody on what's supposed to be a fair town board expressly states that they're against you before you even get up there, that's a violation of due process, and the proceedings will be illegal if he does not recuse himself tonight.
And if anybody knows a thing or two about that, it would be the guy whose super PAC is suing members of Congress for their role in, you know, helping foment an insurrection. And I don't know. The effort still goes on to see if Ron Johnson, Tom Tiffany, Scott Fitzgerald can be off the ballot for their roles.
We have some I don't know if we have enough time for that, Pat, but we've got some bad news on that front.
Oh, no. See, now that's and it's something that we talked about that in the Madison Cawthorn case as well, where, you know, the laws appear clear, but whether it's the Supreme Court of the United States or a tiny town board, you know, it's, you know, the people who make the rules are the things that matter most. And that's why elections matter most. And that's why we continue to talk about the democracy beat, both at Up North News and on Kirk's Up North podcast on Wednesday nights. So I imagine we'll be talking a little bit about that tomorrow night. I talked to Kristen Lyerly. We're probably going to focus on what's happened in Keele as well, the school district that, again, conservatives took over the school board. And so they basically backed down in what appears to be a case of trans bullying, because, again, it's people that sit on these boards. So, I mean, Kirk, will obviously, I wish you all the best. If there's one thing I know, it's, you know, if there's one guy that is going to go in that room smiling and coming out smiling, it's going to be you.
And well, you've made so I love many people it. I love it.
In the process, you know.
This is how it works, Pat. It's like I'm like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. You know, if you punch me in the gut, I just absorb your arm and then I just bend over and break it off.
I never thought of it like that, and it's going to be an interesting visual for the meeting.
I'm soft.
Tonight.
I'm soft in the middle too because I drink too much of my beer. So
well, we all have to have our gifts, Kirk. So, but You know, I mentioned this on the podcast last week too, but it is very gratifying. And if folks don't follow the Minocqua Brewing Company, you should, if for no other reason than not just to see the trolls, but to see the people that love what you do and what you stand for. So, Kirk, thanks so much for doing that. Good luck tonight, and I'll talk to you tomorrow night, buddy.
All right. See you later, man.
All right. It's Kirk Bankstead, everybody, and I will be back along with Dom filling in for Mike Crute here in just a little bit.
It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Someplace warm. A place where the beer flows like wine. Where beautiful women instinctively flock like the salmon of Capistrano. I'm talking about a little place called...
Walk